What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care. So sit back, relax, and defocus.
Greetings, colleagues, and welcome to the Defocus Media Podcast. It's your favorite optometrist, Dr. Daryl Glover. And today we have a very exciting show in store for you. Today we have an optometrist, practice leader, and someone that is very passionate about empowering eye care providers to become healthcare leaders around the world and impacting healthcare systems. Friends and family, I'd like to welcome my friend, my buddy, my colleague, Dr. Justin Manning. Dr. Manning, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. This is super exciting to be on the podcast, and I can't thank you enough to be on here, and I just appreciate the opportunity to be on here and have the opportunity to share just a little bit of what I think is important and what just makes us special as optometrists. So this is a privilege and an honor. So thanks.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. I mean, just to give you guys some background, I love LinkedIn, and Dr. Manning does as well. And I came across Dr. Manning by his Monday rants, and it's very interesting. He's always given us great insight and, you know, things to think about as eye care professionals. As a matter of fact, let's get started with your Monday rant today. I was watching it earlier. Can you just let the listeners know what you were ranting about today?
Oh, geez. Yeah, I didn't expect these. When I started these Monday rants, it's kind of a funny story. I just started ranting at random, and some friends and family, I don't even know we're actually listening to them and watching them, were like, can you please pick a day, because I kind of anticipate when you're going to talk and then it doesn't happen. So can you pick a day? So I figured Monday was a great way to start the week off with just some challenging thoughts and topics and some things that are near and dear to my heart, as they say. So this morning's rant was on care coordination and, unfortunately, just some appalling statistics about how we don't communicate well as providers, from provider to provider. If we refer a patient out, we don't send the proper information. If we get a patient referred in, we don't communicate back to the provider. We order tests. Well, we don't tell the provider we ordered those tests, or vice versa. Then we order tests again that didn't need to be done. And really just focusing on the patient's benefit and actually getting the level of care and treatment if we're referring out or receiving a referral that we would expect that patient to receive, but at the same time, delivering the care that the patient and that referring provider would expect and hope for their patient to receive.
And you see, sometimes we just need to hear that rant, because, you know, we all go through this stuff, and sometimes we just need to hear it from someone else to really sit back and really check ourselves and say, hey, am I really giving a complete patient care experience like I'm supposed to? So that's why I'm always grateful for your rants, because I learn, I love to get the feedback in regards to the comment section, and just like to hear your perspective on everything. You know, I've been following you for a decent amount of time now, and I'm very familiar with your background, but for those that are listening, tell us about yourself and how you got into optometry, Dr. Manning.
All right. Well, I always like to joke that I have as many years of experience as I have candles on my birthday cake, because my father's an optometrist. I grew up watching him build a private practice in small town Northeast Ohio. Turns out my brother followed suit and graduated optometry school in 2018. So none of us planned to do optometry, but we all just felt a passion and love taking care of people and loving the power of vision and eye healthcare, and really just jumped into it that way. My family vacations every year were to optometry's meeting. So got a little diversity in U.S. location, but it was without a doubt it was like 12 years in a row, like without missing a beat. All right, vacation, where's optometry's meeting? Boom, there, we're done. You know, let's go explore.
Nice, nice. Well, you have a great background in optometry, but one thing that I really like about your background is that you have a master's in public health. How has this degree shaped and formed your career in optometry?
That's a great question. When I started optometry school and when I went into optometry, public health was something I knew very little about. I had no interest in pursuing another graduate degree. And so I really kind of feel like I fell into getting a public health degree. The way I was like, because when patients ask, oh, what's the MPH stand for? And I tell them what a master's of public health is, I always like to describe it as saying, I know the eye care and healthcare system from the inside. I'm a provider. I see patients all day long. I know the system from the inside. But having a public health degree means now I know the system and see the system from the outside. And those two views could not be more different. And so having a public health degree really allows kind of to, like I said, to see both perspectives and understand how what I do as a clinician impacts the greater system and how the greater system and healthcare ecosystem could therefore impact how I practice as a provider and could do things better. I actually started my MPH when I left the country for a year and a half to teach optometry. And part of the opportunity that I had while I was abroad was to start an MPH. And so I took full advantage of that and impacted my work there, but continues to impact what I do on a daily basis.
Now, you can't just say you did something internationally and just stop there. Come on, you got to tell us more, man. Let's know about the location, duration, the experience you gained. I mean, I want to hear more details of what took place.
How much time do you have? Because it's
hey, man, the world's yours. We have all the time in the world.
So I had the opportunity to teach optometry as a professor at the National Autonomous University of Nicaragua in Central America. And so from fall of 2015 to spring of 2017, I lived in Managua. I went to work at the university and I taught contact lenses. I taught clinical skills. I worked to build the community clinic and the students' clinical experience. And I wrote their contact lens curriculum, introduced specialty contact lenses, and really just had a chance to see optometry from a different perspective and learn a foreign language at the same time. I like to joke that teaching is one thing. So all of our professors in optometry school, that's a heck of a job, I will say. Teaching optometry is another. So put those two together, and then trying to do that in a foreign language just makes it that much more entertaining.
I bet. I just have problems with just speaking English to my own patients sometimes when I'm tired or something like that.
That makes two of us. So you're not alone there.
So you mentioned contacts, specialty contacts. I'm very interested in knowing what's going on in other countries when it comes to specialty contacts. I mean, what are they fitting? Is it just glaro lenses, or I mean, what are they fitting in particular abroad?
It's a good question. It really depends on the country. It depends on the level of development. It depends on what optometry looks like as a profession. Some countries, optometrists can only do refractions and write a glasses prescription. Other countries, optometrists are able to diagnose disease. You know, if you want to talk Latin America, Colombia has the ability to actually prescribe medications for ocular disease. So it all depends on what the scope of practice is and the level of access, one, to care, as well as the financial abilities and the income of individuals within the country. So strictly kind of, you know, outside of how developed is the healthcare system, how developed is the country in general, there are a number of countries that have access to multiple scleral lens designs. There's a big thing, you know, myopia, as we know, is getting a lot of traction. So there's a lot, I'm a part of a Latin American group of optometrists that are doing a lot of ortho-K and myopia control. So different lens designs, a number of specialty contact lens labs actually contract with US-based designs. So they have the lab, they make the lens, they fabricate it, but it's based off of a design. I consult for Valley Contacts on their custom stable design. And their custom stable design is fabricated around the world in various, you know, countries, Europe, Asia, and Latin America. And I know, you know, Blanchard has a lens, MSD is available. There's a number of them. So depends on the country, what they have access to. A lot of countries will have to either, you know, if they don't have the infrastructure to make the lens per se, they'll import it from another country, you know, close by. So yeah, a lot of access around the world to a lot of the same lenses and technology that we have here in the States.
Yeah, I do a lot of work out of Nigeria myself. I have a luxury eyewear boutique out there. Awesome. And that's one thing that we always run into problems with is just getting contact lens into the country. And if you even think about a specialty contact lens, that's even more difficult. I mean, number one, you have to look at, you know, your custom, your VAT charges, all that stuff coming in. I mean, it's an arm and a leg and, you know, the amount of time it takes. And if you have to refit the person, I mean, there's so many things that go into it, even though there is a large need for these specialty contact lens. So I'm hoping that, you know, at some point in time in the world that folks will realize that these other countries outside of the United States, outside of South Africa, outside of Australia, the UK, you know, these are places that really need some help and they need to make it more accessible and more manageable as far as cost goes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, these lenses aren't necessarily, these products aren't necessarily, they're certainly not inexpensive here. And when you add in all of those additional shipping, importation, you know, those prices climb significantly. And if the population is not at a level to afford that, or if they need it and they can't afford it, how do you go within, work within the healthcare system to make these specialty items, although medically necessary in many cases, available and accessible? It's a big challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have great insight in regards to international eye care, but let's take it back to domestically. You know, I want to learn more about, you know, your practice, what you do, what type of model you practice, and what's going on in your neck of the woods.
So I practice in Colorado Springs with Bettner Vision, rapidly expanding practice here in the city, and we've really expanded significantly the medical model. Been always very strong in the comprehensive eye care, and have a really awesome supply of boutique optical, but doing a lot more on the medical front. And we started a specialty contact lens practice, circling back to contact lenses, for really creating, when we started the Keratoconus and Scleral Lens Institute, was based off of experience that I had just as a doctor participating and observing in the Keratoconus group Facebook page, and listening to individuals just comment on how keratoconus as a disease affected their lives on a day-in and day-out basis, and how hard it was to try and explain what the condition was. That for me, it kind of changed my perspective. And as an optometrist, it's like, it's easy to go, okay, well, fit you in lenses, we'll get you seeing better. Okay, you're 20/20, good, you're out the door, have a good day. Without taking into consideration this is a disease that affects 24 hours, 7 days a week, chronic condition that affects every activity of daily living. And how can we create a place where individuals with corneal degeneration and corneal disease can call home? And they don't have to explain themselves, that they get to come in and they know, these people know what I deal with. These people know my life and my story and my experience. And our job then as a clinic is to provide that level of service to move them forward in their, really in their daily life, and improve quality of life beyond just quality of vision.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned that doctor-patient interaction or relationship. I know recently you posted a link from Oprah and Melinda Gates on empathy. And I know for me, empathy is a huge role, plays a huge role in doctor-patient interaction and doctor-patient care. What's your perspective on empathy and how are you utilizing that in your practice?
I love talking about empathy, and I do a lot of, you know, podcast listening, and I love diving into leadership literature, and empathy is just becoming a really big, you know, it's easy to say, oh, empathy is a big buzzword, but I really think empathy, for the role that it plays in leadership and patient care and healthcare delivery, really is finally taking, it's really getting the legs that it needs to grow and improve across the board. Empathy is listening. Empathy is understanding. I can't tell you how many times I have patients who are like, I've been trying to tell somebody that for years and nobody will listen. Nobody understands. Or I've always, nobody's explained this or understand why whatever it is that they have is affecting them. And really, I think empathy is listening, understanding, not being quick to say, oh, well, you're wrong, that's not how it is, or I can't believe that you thought, not that we would ever say, I can't believe you thought that. But it's very easy for us to be like, with our training and our expertise, to project like, well, you should just know these things. But the patient don't know these things. That's why they're in our chair, in our office, asking questions, wanting to know more and understand more. And like I said, empathy is just really at the heart of it, is understanding, digging deeper into their specific issues, their specific conditions, their specific, how whatever it is that they're dealing with healthcare wise and health wise is affecting their quality of life, and working to treat and address, get to the bottom of whatever it is that has them
in our chair. And I think that that's simple. And we all would like to say that we do that and we're excellent at it. But I think if we really look at our day-to-day, how we interact with patients, how many patients we see, our motivation behind seeing those patients, I think we'd see that we have a lot more room to grow in the empathy area.
I agree. And, you know, I want to dig into this a little deeper because I'm very passionate about this term as well. And, you know, for me, just to get to know a patient is like the key thing in order for them to open up to me. So whenever I start to see patients, you know, the first thing I do when I walk into a room is something I call the 2-minute drill. And basically with that 2 minutes, and it could be, you know, 30 seconds, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever it may be, I just get to know my patient. I ask them, how's your day going along? How was your weekend? What are you doing this evening? What are you having for lunch? You know, I just dig and ask these questions so I can make it more of a personable relationship, but also just a more intimate interaction. And for me, that really opens up the door to just learning more about the patients. What are you doing in your practice to really get to know your patients and to put yourself in that position to be empathetic when it comes to that doctor-patient interaction?
I love that. I think I'm going to start implementing my own two-minute drill in office. I love it. Thanks, man. I do something similar. I come in, I introduce myself, I sit down, and I review a little bit with the patient as to what my technician has told me about what's going on. And then I just let the patient, and I always talk to the patient. I like to hear it from them and in their own words and get to know them and understand. Here in Colorado, we have a lot of transplants. Well, too many people are trying to get out here and enjoy this beautiful weather and the beautiful mountains. But I digress. So it's very easy to connect with and start by, you know, is this home originally for you? Or, you know, how'd you wind up here? And I just let them tell their story of how they wound up here. And I find something to connect with on a personal level, whether that's family or whether that's activities and hobbies or, you know, travel. That's a huge passion of mine. And a lot of my patients, for whatever reason, love to travel. And so we find a way to connect, and we just share stories, and it really does. And when it comes to their actual problem, I listen and I ask poignant questions, and I delve deeper because I want them thinking about what it is that they're experiencing, and I want them to explain it in their own words. And I just sit back and listen, and I often just sit with my back to the computer and my legs crossed and just listen. And then I'll, you know, do my charting as needed, but does. It's that connecting with the patient. It's that listening. It's the getting to know them, understanding what makes them tick, and then going from there of how we can address whatever it is that they have, what's going on. And then from there, I take it when it comes to kind of the treatment plan, I engage them in it. If it's something that they can do or they have the option to do, I'm going to let them know, here's why this is what I'm prescribing for you. But, you know, we can do this, we cannot do this, we can go this direction. I'm going to tailor our approach to what it is that you need and your symptoms. And we're going to do this together. And it's really fostering an environment of healthcare. Eye care is not done in a bubble, and it's not done by one person, and it's done by a team. I always like to tell my patients that I know eyes. That's my job. That's my training. You know your eyes because you live with them day in and day out. And our job together is to put our equal knowledges of eyes, mine of eyes in general and yours of your own, to where we can develop and treat whatever it is that is going on when you're with your eyes and your vision.
I love that. I mean, one of the things I always tell my patients is that we work together as a team. You know, we're going to work together and figure out what we need to accommodate your lifestyle and your personal needs. And it just makes life so much easier when you two are working together to, you know, find one common goal and for them to see better and also have healthier eyes. And, you know, you touched on travel. I'm in the Triangle area in Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina, and we have a lot of transplants. And travel is a big thing. You know, another thing that is a great conversation starter if you're a little nervous and you're a listener and you're trying to figure out how to, you know, start this conversation, food. You know, a lot of people are foodies and a lot of people are traveling, you know, or they like to travel. So those are two good starting points that you can always come up with whenever you're sitting down trying to foster that, you know, great relationship with your patient.
I couldn't agree. And I think a lot of patients most patients that I've talked to have had some bad experience somewhere down the, you know, throughout their life with another healthcare provider
or multiple or continual bad experiences. And those are patients that I take extra special care to try and not just, I don't necessarily do it to promote the practice or promote me as a provider, but I'd love to see our healthcare system change and our healthcare delivery change in a way that is both more effective and efficient, but also patient-centered and that really try to reframe of, okay, what can healthcare look like? What should healthcare look like? Let's achieve that health and healthcare and eye care together the way that it should be. And I think a lot of patients that I see are just really open to that and are really and it engages them and it opens them up and it just allows us to accomplish a lot of great things.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, I think there's a lot of folks in the world that are eye care professionals that believe the same thing. I mean, let's leave them with three tips on how we as eye care professionals can be leaders in the healthcare system. What three tips do you have to tell our listeners?
So I think there are three. I describe leadership in eye care and in healthcare in general. I think there are three pillars that sort of underpin an eye care leader. One is inspiration. So I inspire. I inspire on a daily basis by patients for better health, better vision care, better outcomes, a better quality of life. I inspire staff and the care delivery and the patient experience that what we do is more than just taking care of an individual patient. You know, we impact their daily lives. We impact their what they do day in and day out, and therefore impact the population and the patient's community and their health and work on a small scale, but have impacts that are felt throughout the entire healthcare system. So I think that's the first one. And then the second pillar, kind of piggybacking off of that, is impact. And one of the big things that I gained in my public health education was understanding population health. And population health, which is a subset of public health, focuses on, it involves a lot of data analysis. It involves focusing and tailoring treatments and interventions to a specific population, but delving deeper into what actually impacts that population's ability to be healthy. So we talk about things like social determinants of health. What are things outside of the patient's, what are the factors outside of just individualized interaction as a patient that impacts their health, whether that's race, socioeconomic status, sexual orientation, location, physically where they live, all of the things that we don't necessarily think about as traditional healthcare, but those are things that impact their ability. And I think a leader has the eye care leader impacts their patients, impacts eye care as a profession, and impacts their profession when they understand what goes into an individual's overall health, that they're looking for ways to improve their patients, but the population that patient belongs to, their level of health and their level of wellness and their level of access to care. And that in turn turns into the third pillar, which I jokingly term eye care. Care meaning that patient experience, that delivering a level of experience that is unfelt anywhere else, and understanding how eye care, we are primary eye care providers. We may be the only provider that somebody sees in a given year. And if all we focus on is just vision and glasses and having, okay, great, here's your prescription, go buy a pair of glasses, we may miss significant health issues. And we can serve as a big stepping off point into the greater healthcare system. And we can help direct those patients towards better health. Obviously, diabetes is a significant healthcare problem in the United States and around the world. And it's only getting worse as our population continues along the lifestyle that our population has. And we see diabetics. If we look at statistics of how many, if you look at HEDIS data of commercially insured individuals with diabetes who actually get diabetic eye exams, it's like 50 to 60%. It's terrible, if you ask me. And so understanding the role that eye care plays within the greater healthcare system, and therefore our patients' greater health experience, really underpins what it means to be a leader in eye care. So again, I inspire, I impact, and I care.
Wow. I love all three of those, especially the I impact, that second pillar, simply because I cannot tell you how many patients I have that come in that are Black patients, and they're saying, hey, you know what, Dr. Glover, I've went to numerous eye care professionals and they just don't understand me. They don't understand my background. They don't understand what I'm telling them, and they're not listening. And, you know, I'm hoping that you're going to be able to understand where I'm coming from, being that you are a Black physician. And by the end of the exam, they're so excited and just happy that someone actually understands where they're coming from. They understand their demographic, their background, and it makes a world of difference in the overall doctor-patient interaction as well. So I'm with you 100%. I think that's key. I think being that we live in a world that's becoming a big melting pot, really knowing backgrounds of everyone will make a world of difference in the ultimate healthcare system.
Absolutely. That cultural understanding and that cultural communication, you know, in the past we talked about cultural sensitivity, and I think that only goes so far. Cultural sensitivity is, in my opinion, it's just understanding, okay, I'm different from my patients, and therefore they're going to take things or understand things or interact differently. Taking that into cultural competency understands this patient has experiences that I personally don't understand, but I'm going to work to try and understand that those experiences to a level that I can direct my treatment plan to fit within their specific, what their experience. I, having taught optometry in Central America, I speak fluent Spanish. And so I have a lot of Spanish speaking patients, and the ability to communicate directly. And because I lived abroad, I can communicate a little within the cultural understanding as well, beyond just the language, and the connection that brings, just as the, you know, what you shared, it's critical. It's critical in delivering that level of care, and therefore ultimately impacting from a long-term health and wellness perspective. It's critical. It's really is truly, it's powerful, and it's really impactful too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Dr. Manning, I had a great time with you on the podcast, and you know, you dropped a lot of great jewels, valuable information, especially those three pillars. You know, if someone wants to get in touch with you or hear about your Monday rants, what's the best social media platforms to contact you on, or email address or LinkedIn account? You know, share that information with our followers and listeners, if you don't mind.
Absolutely. So LinkedIn, it's Justin Manning, OD. So linkedin.com/IN/JustinManningOD. You can find me on Instagram at Colorado iDoc, EYE. So Colorado EYEDOC. And yeah, we'll go from there. And you can watch all my rants. And I love feedback. So if there's anything in particular that you feel we need to discuss more, or we need to have, you know, more information, or dude, this was terrible, don't talk about it ever again, I love that too. So follow me. Let's get this conversation going, because I think that we as a profession, as optometrists, we as group players in the greater healthcare system can do so much more for the sake of our patients, for the sake of the population of people that we interact with and care for, and our greater communities and nation, you know, just to be healthier.
I love it. I love it. And you know what, Dr. Manning, I'm going to invite you on Facebook Live or Instagram Live for a Monday rant, so we can go back and forth and really open it up to all the eye care professionals out there in the world. What do you say?
Hey, I'm in. That sounds awesome. Just name the date and time and I'm there.
Let's do it. Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast, and remember, we keep it 2020 around here, pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.